This is a special bonus episode of Coffee with Kif Kif. It only lasts about 10 minutes, and as you can hear, I'll be talking in English for once. The normal concept has also slightly changed. In regular episodes, I normally sit down with an interesting expert for a cup of coffee and a deeper analysis of pressing social issues. This time, however, I didn't really sit down with my expert of choice. Instead, I took some audio bits from lectures he gave and which are freely available on YouTube. So please brace yourself for this short episode in which we have a deeper look at why we need a revolt of the caring classes. Revolts and the deep social change they might bring are mostly subdued for two reasons, so it seems. The first reason is obvious: blunt abuse of power. This abuse of power can manifest itself in political pressure, juridical impediment, police brutality, military might, or a combination of those. It prevents potential uprisings by instilling fear and squashes uprisings that somehow still emerge through force. The second reason why revolts are subdued is less straightforward than the blunt abuse of power, because it involves the oppressed just as much as the oppressors. It's not so much a matter of one party suppressing the other, but more a matter of a shared mental inhibition, because social change is often prevented by widespread illusions which give people the feeling their situation of oppression is logical, self-evident, and unavoidable. Some of the strongest contemporary revolt-preventing illusions have to do with the way we look at the economy and how people started to believe it's the inevitable result of semi-divine market forces. Right in the middle of these economic belief systems, we can find some particularly strong and widely shared illusions concerning work. Take, for example, the very basic meritocratic premise that if you study well, if you're a bit disciplined, and if you take your chances, you'll easily be able to find a job you can be really passionate about. A job that not only brings in some money, but which is also truly useful and worthwhile. Since many people spend about 40 or more hours a week working, it seems only logical they indeed would be doing something they really love to do. Reality, however, turns out to be quite the opposite.
One of the things that emerged from my research is that there seems to be a general rule that the more your work actually and obviously benefits other human beings, the less that they're going to pay you to do it. So the more useless or even, you know, harmful your job, the more you get paid, and the more respect and social status you get from having it.
This is David Graeber. He's a professor at the London School of Economics, and he recently published a remarkable book called Bullshit Jobs.
And I define bullshit jobs as jobs which even the person doing it secretly believes shouldn't exist. You know, if that job were to disappear, they feel that either it would make no difference whatsoever, or the world might be a slightly better place. In the UK, 37% of all employees said their job makes no meaningful contribution to the world. And here in the Netherlands, it was actually higher. It was 40%.
40%. That's a whole lot.
This is the surest sign we live in a completely stupid and absurd economic system, and it's really got to change. I mean, what could be more dumb than like 40% of the population going to work every day and saying nobody should be doing this?
It seems quite hard to disagree on that particular point, and it raises a whole lot of questions. Not in the least because the existence of such an amount of bullshit jobs sounds quite paradoxical in a supposedly capitalist society.
We have this idea that capitalism is marked by efficiency. You think of useless jobs, you think of the Soviet Union, you know. They had a policy of universal employment, so they had to make up jobs. So, you know, if you wanted to buy a loaf of bread, there are three different people that had to give you a ticket and take the ticket. You know, they were constantly making up jobs. Why is it capitalism does the same thing? That's a really interesting question. Back in the 19th century, there was this idea that the world is something we produce through work. And work was valuable because it's productive. And around the turn of the century, there was a kind of counteroffensive. They said, don't get the meaning of your life from your work. You should get the meaning of your life from what you consume at home. You know, you shape your identity through your consumption. And it's, you know, us capitalists, we're the people who actually come up with the ideas. You're just like robots working in the factory. We are the producers of wealth, you know, the rich people, basically. And that's what people seem to think nowadays. It was very, very successful. They changed people's minds about where value comes from.
This conceptual shift obviously doesn't explain every aspect of the rise of bullshit jobs or the wage imbalance between useful and useless work. Another illuminating aspect Graeber frequently talks about is what he calls managerial feudalism.
Often corporate managers, executives, their status is measured by how many people they have working under them. So they have no incentive to fire anybody who's unnecessary. So they sort of accumulate these sort of useless people that are almost like feudal retainers. You know, they sort of sit around making you look impressive.
As such, the term managerial feudalism describes how the corporate managerial class create all sorts of hierarchical layers to keep those at the bottom from standing up to them directly. Those layers are mostly called middle management. Such middle management often isn't really there to do something useful. Rather, it's there to keep those who do the real work away from the top management or to keep them so busy they don't have any time left to wonder how the hell they got stuck in this situation of wage slavery. In a similar way, most useful jobs are also being bullshitized very rapidly. Think of teachers and nurses being swamped with senseless box-ticking admin work. In fact, if you add up all the hours of bullshit work in our society, it leads to an interesting and hard-hitting conclusion.
And Keynes famously predicted in the 30s that we were almost up on the time that we should be working certainly half what we're doing now, probably considerably less. And if you look at the kind of jobs that existed in Keynes's time, well, we have eliminated a lot of them. He talked about technological unemployment in the 1930s, and a lot of people thought, well, you know, it wasn't really true. You know, everybody's been saying the robots are going to take our jobs, you know, for the last 100 years or so. Unemployment stays about the same in the long run. Well, you know, maybe it's not such a threat. But I would make the opposite argument. I would say, you know, the robots have been taking our jobs for the last 100 years or so. But instead of redistributing the labor in a reasonable fashion, we've simply made up completely meaningless, pointless jobs. This is the reason why we don't have a 15-hour work week.
In the end, it's nothing but shared mental inhibitions that make us ignore these kinds of startling facts. Illusions and taboos keep us from recognizing the obvious. Yet once you get rid of mental inhibitions, illusions and taboos, it all becomes abundantly clear. Contrary to everything that our economic system is supposed to produce, the fact of the matter is that most people you know either have a bullshit job or provide services for people who do. So on the one hand, you're actually quite lucky if you're not someone with a bullshit job or someone who's in service of bullshit jobs. But on the other hand, if you do have a useful job, you're probably paid very little and might sooner or later find yourself in a position where you're struggling to survive.
What we need is a fundamental moral and conceptual revolution about what is the value of work. And we need to move away from the notion of production, which is very patriarchal, you know, and back to a notion of caring labor as the fundamental form of value creation. I mean, you know, most work isn't about producing anything. Most work is about maintaining and taking care of things. I mean, I always say, you know, you make a cup once, but you wash it 1,000 times. Work is about maintaining things, keeping things nice, keeping them the same, taking care of animals, plants, people, things. That's what people actually do. They take care of each other and their environment. I think if we start from that and come up with an conception of value, that is the primary form of value, then that would be a society that would make sense.
There simply is no reason why people with useful and world-improving jobs, like teachers, nurses, garbage collectors, or actors, should be underpaid, while insurance account managers, corporate lawyers, and telemarketers are paid lavishly. There actually is a word for such blatant, pervasive, and completely unjustifiable inequality. It's called exploitation. And that's why we need a revolt.
I actually coined the phrase the revolt of the caring classes as what we need.
Obviously, such a revolt won't be welcomed by those in power, since those in power aren't in the business of caretaking. Rather, they're in the business of making profits and creating managerial feudalism that keeps them at the top of the pecking order. But a revolt might be coming nonetheless.
In a way, it's starting to happen. I feel that Occupy was, in a way, the first kind of stirrings of this revolt. If you look at the people, especially the people who kind of couldn't come to the occupations but expressed their support on the We Are the 99% Tumblr page, overwhelming majority were in what I would call the caring professions. They were in health, education, social services, and they all said the same thing. I wanted to have a job where I could benefit other people. Well, at least I wasn't hurting them, you know? And if you want to do something where you care for others, they'll put you so deeply in debt and they'll give you so little money that you can't even take care of your own family, your own children. This is ridiculous. And that was the real cry of outrage that drove the movement.